This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 18th of May, 2010, and I'm joined on the line today for my monthly conversation with Bob Chapman of TheInternationalForecaster.com. In addition to spending 3 years in U.S. Army counterintelligence, being the world's largest silver and gold stockbroker in the 1980s, owning and writing the Gary Allen Report, and generally fighting the New World Order for half a century, Bob Chapman currently compiles the International Forecaster newsletter on matters political, economic, business, financial, and social twice a week, which I'm sure is quite a way to spend your retirement. Bob Chapman, thank you for joining me once again on the Corbett Report.
Well, you're entirely welcome, and it's great being back.
Excellent. Well, Mr. Chapman, what is there to say about the titanic tectonic shifts that have been taking place in the past month since we last talked, with the destabilization of the European monetary zone proceeding apace, and the 1,000-point plunge, domestic financial terrorism on the Dow recently, and the passage of a watered-down and ultimately completely useless version of the Audit the Fed bill. We've seen some truly remarkable things happening lately, and that's hardly surprising as we begin the slide down the slope into the planned financial Armageddon, which will only serve to benefit the banksters who created it in the first place. So I want to start today by putting things in perspective and drawing attention to an incredibly insightful piece that you wrote recently for The Forecaster that you put under the title, "The Morality of the Financial Monetary System is Really What is Broken." So why don't you tell the audience about that essay and at what points you were noting there?
Well, I think the most important thing is that overall worldwide, just in the last 50 years, the attitudes of people toward other people and the attitudes toward what's right and wrong and what should and should not go on within business and government is totally distorted. I mean, very few people seem to care anymore. And even in business and in government, what people do is things that weren't acceptable before, but now they're politically and socially correct, which is like lying. And, you know, that's borne out by government statistics since 1980. They've distorted the statistics so much that they're virtually worthless. And I see these companies basing decisions on perhaps the production of homes or the production of widgets or whatever based on government figures, and they get to the edge of bankruptcy because they listen to the government, which was not telling the truth. And so it's a whole syndrome that infects world society, and it's just different than what it was before, and I don't know what the solution is. People know right from wrong. They obviously just don't want to do it.
Well, that's right, and I think that's something that a lot of people, even people in the younger generation like myself, have already seen and experienced during their lifetime, is a growing apathy and zombification of the public in the face of what I think in any other age would be seen as truly incredible seismic shifts that are going on, and people seem to be sleeping through it. And it does seem like people have lost that that concern that that perhaps they once had for humanity. And as you say, I don't know what the solution to this is, but perhaps defining the problem might be part of that solution. Do you think this is something that has been planned or engineered into our society, or is it simply a manifestation of having, I guess, living high on the hog for too long with and getting drunk off of easy credit?
Well, I think that having a better lifestyle and being able to do all the things you ever dreamt of doing makes you think that you can do anything you want. I think that's part of it. But since since the start of Deweyism in 1929, which was the degradation of the academic situation in schools in America, and in the 1930s, coming to the fore, the advent of advertising and shaping the minds of masses of people, and not only in America on Madison Ave, but Goebbels comes to mind, and and so on and so forth. And so I think a great deal of it is through propaganda. And, you know, I got a letter yesterday from someone that said, well, I don't watch television because it's a waste of time. It's an 18-year-old. But the average person in my house watches it 8 hours a day. And so this is probably, in large part, a reason why people are brainwashed and people are dumb. Instead of reading, they're watching, and watching usually programs that are essentially trash. And so, yes, it's both things.
Well, that's exactly right. There's no doubt that our access to more diverse forms of media now through, of course, the internet and all of the possibilities that's opening is opening a type of, I don't know, Pandora's box, but certainly a box from which anything can come. And, of course, that could be either for the good or for the bad. And it's, I think, too chaotic for the people who want to control the system, the Illuminists who are at the pinnacle of the pyramid. And I think that's why we're going to see the clamping down on the internet and all forms of free expression. So hopefully they can try to cram it back in the box. But I don't see that really working. I don't see them being able to get the jack back in the box once it's sprung out. What do you think about their attempts to limit this flowering of information that we see going on right now?
Well, I think they'll try to do it. How successful they'll be, I don't know. It's hard to say. They're going to try very hard to control it. And I'm not being Pollyannish, but I think they're going to have a terrifically hard time doing that. The hue and cry could start a revolution worldwide. And I just don't think it's going to happen. But then they're going to be relentless. They're going to try and try and try to first contain content, and then secondly, to try to limit the kind of programs like this and talk radio and things of that sort off of off the airways, because we're having a tremendous impact. I mean, I get invited to go on television and radio and get interviewed by media all over the world that are thirsty for the truth that can't get it. And so whatever we're doing, it's right, because we're breaking down the barriers and we're keeping people from controlling the internet, and although they're going to try, I don't think they're going to be successful.
Do you think that 50 years from now, the events that we've seen taking place in Iceland, with the people taking back power in the government and the people's movement in Iceland, and the riots that are going on in Greece, do you think these types of events will be seen as the beginning of a wider global revolution against the bankers, or do you think this will ultimately be suppressed and be swept under the rug?
No, I think it's going to have a long-lasting effect. And the reason I do is that it is not common for indigenous people to riot the way the Greeks have or the people in Iceland did. They had a very good reason for doing that. In the case of Iceland, the people that ran the banks were crooks. They stole the money, and they tried to leave Iceland holding the bag. And they're broke. And England and Holland want them to give them some $5 billion because their banks went under, which is totally absurd. Bankruptcy is bankruptcy. In Greece, the people were lied to by government. And even though they were lied to by government, the people in the top of the Eurozone, the European Central Bank, the banks who bought the bonds and essentially lent Greece money, all of these players, including Goldman Sachs, that helped the government hide what they were up to for a long time. And the Greek people are saying, we're not responsible for that. We were lied to just like everybody else. The bankers should have never made those loans or bought those bonds because they knew what was going on behind the scenes. And they're right. And, you know, this is a take you're not normally going to hear. And when I was asked if I was PM for a day in Greece, what would I do? I said, well, I wouldn't be a Bilderberger like Mr. Papandreou. But my answer to that is default on all the debt, leave the Eurozone, set up the drachma again, and get your house in order. And I went into detail about that. And that's what the Greeks should do. And other nations who are in the same position should do the same thing, which are the other four pigs, so to speak. But there's 19 nations that are close to bankruptcy, one of which is bankrupt, which is Iceland. And it's not going to go away. And the money that's being spent to bail out these five countries in Europe is not going to be enough. And it's going to be followed by the other 19, with the exception of four or five that are not in Europe, such as the U.S., the U.K., Japan, Argentina, Venezuela. These countries are going to go down too. But this is the way this whole thing is headed. So are they a catalyst? Yes, they are, both of them. And what both inhabitants of those countries are saying is, I've had enough and I'm not going to take it anymore.
One of the things that you point to in your article about one of the ways in which the system is broken and how that manifests is in the oversight and the various regulatory boards and structures that are supposed to be, I guess, keeping an eye on these types of things and making sure they don't happen. But as I'm sure my listeners will be aware, for the most part, of course, this is the exact opposite. And these types of oversights are really meant to provide cover for the banksters to run their operations and to, I guess, crack down on anyone who's actually trying to blow the whistle on them, like people like Attorney General Eliot Spitzer and others who, I guess, cross that line and get a little bit too far into questioning what the banksters are doing. And one of the very specific organizations that you point to in your article is the new proposed Financial Stability Oversight Council, which turns out to be quite an Orwellian name. Tell people a little bit about this FSOC and what it's designed to do and who's really puppeteering it.
Well, the banks are puppeteering it. Just like in the new banking regulations, they want a new consumer protection agency. The Fed wants to control the SEC and the CFTC, Commodity Futures Trading Corporation, and the controller in the currency, and the FDIC, which would make it a monopoly, a financial monopoly in America. They would be dictating darn near everything to everybody, and they already, quote, dictate to the banks, when in fact the banks that own the Fed tell the Fed what to say to the banks, if you can understand that. Financial stability is just another ring around the rosy. They're not going to seek stability anywhere. It's loot and shoot. The people who were involved for over the last 100 years in banking and in Wall Street and insurance have made billions and billions of dollars. And they've done that by having all of the odds on their side or just outright cheating the public. And so there's not going to be any oversight. And even if there is oversight, is it going to have sharp teeth like a shark? Or is it going to be like a grouper that has no powerful jaws to do something? No, it's just another method of bamboozling the public. And this character, Dodd, is a crook just like his father, is ramrodding the thing through before he fades out. and doesn't run for office again and walks away with hundreds of millions of dollars. And this is all about money and power. And the people in Congress, most of them take the payoffs, which are campaign contributions and all kinds of other little goodies. And that's why it's so important to kick almost all of them out of office in November. Because if you don't do it, the only legal method for you to combat people who are trying to take your freedom away from you is gone. It's over. This is the last election you'll have a chance to do it in. Other than that, we'll refer back to Iceland and Greece, which is only the beginning. There'll be revolution all over the world.
Well, a pretty bold pronouncement there, but I think you're spot on with that. I don't see any other way for this really to play out at this point, since they've cooked the cake so thoroughly. I think you're right, certainly about the Oversight Council, as it's called, and what it will really be used for. And we see that obviously from the people who are involved with it, as you mentioned, from the Secretary of the Treasury, Geithner, to the Comptroller of the Currency, to the head of CFTC, to the head of this SEC. And of course, we all know what types of games they've been up to for so long, with the CFTC, of course, covering up the manipulation in the gold and silver markets, even when it's directly brought to their attention by whistleblowers. And we've seen, of course, the SEC looking the other way in things like the Madoff affair and Enron. And we see so many of these cover-ups being perpetrated. But I'm sure in the 50 years that you've been operating, you've seen some pretty egregious lack of oversight in your time. What can you say about the way that oversight is usually used as a way of keeping the wraps on big scandals rather than getting them out in the open?
Well, what they usually do, and I was in the brokerage business for 28 years for the Friendlies, what they do is just say, well, look, we found this. And why don't you fix it up, and we'll call attention to the fact that we found some errors or skirting regulations or whatever it's called, when in fact it's far more serious than that. And that's been going on for years and years. And all of these people who work for the SEC, or almost all of them, are not a career employees. They're people who want to work there 3 or 5 or 7 years, get to know everybody on Wall Street because they audit their books or do regulatory things within them, and they know all the big players. And so they decide that they want to go to work for Goldman Sachs or Morgan, and the next time that they're at the office, they'll see the head of personnel or the president of the company or whatever and say, you know, I'm thinking of leaving the SEC. And I'd really like you to consider me for a position doing this, that, and the other thing. And the question is, well, what are you making now, $70,000 a year? And the guy will say, yeah. And say, well, good, we'll start you off at $700,000 a year. And that's what this is all about. And that's why these people within that structure do what they do. Another thing, too, both the CFTC and the SEC are used as hammers. They go after people who don't cooperate, people who operate small brokerage houses, small brokers, newsletter writers, even medium-sized companies, to show that they're doing something, when in fact it's harassment or it's designed to shut people up. I mean, some people might have a publication they send to their clients and the SEC doesn't like the content, or the White House doesn't like the content, et cetera. And that's been going on for years. I put up with it. And I spent 30 years fighting these people. There wasn't a day that I didn't have 3 regulatory agencies in my office. And it cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars a year just to satisfy them with what they wanted to know. But it was all intended to put me out of business.
Well, then let's look at it from the other perspective. So if Bob Chapman was the head of a regulatory agency with real teeth that could really go after the banksters and expose their corruption, what specifically would you be looking into? What things would you want to pry the books open on?
Well, I think the relationship between the large brokerage firms and the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department, they're getting all kinds of inside information. I was a professional trader for 25 years. And if you make 55% of trades correctly, you're doing very well as a trader. And here we are, we're looking at four major banks, which are essentially brokerage firms, that didn't have a bad trade, a bad trading day, ever, during a three-month period. Dear audience, that is physically impossible. And so, this is the sort of thing that's going on. And some of them are using TARP money, which they're leveraging 30, 40, 50 to 1 to make all this money. And how do they know what to do in the market, and why are they always winners? They get inside information. And it's gotten so bad, and I hear the figure kicked around on CNBC, 65 to 68% of trades are black box. It's more like 70 to 72. And then you have professional money managers, and then you get 8% of that are the public. So the public has really left the market. The only investments they have is in 401ks and other retirement-type things. And so they scared everybody out of the market. And so these people run the market up and down like a yo-yo. I mean, the programs that they have today should be banned, just like derivatives. Because the 1,000-point drop in the market was deliberately created by banking and government to scare Congress into not passing legislation of any meaningful value regarding the Federal Reserve, and also not breaking up the too-big-to-fail banks. That's what that was all about. And they can do it anytime they want. They keep the market up at the current levels that it's at because they want to. And unless we can change Congress, the game's over. We have no more freedom. We'll have a complete corporatist fascist government. And these people will keep right on doing what they've been doing until nobody else wants to play.
Will just changing Congress be enough?
We'll find out when we get there. I don't know. There's so much Congress can do, but you have to have a willing Congress. And the guys behind the scenes, the Illuminists, they want to continue to control. So as soon as people come into office, what they'll do is attempt to buy them. And some of them will be bought and some of them won't. But otherwise, there is no other legal way. The court system is incredible. I mean, you get two sets of laws, one for the connected and one for the unconnected. And 90% of the people in America are unconnected. So they lose, whether it's civil or criminal court. And so that's not an avenue. And so I'm not optimistic if the American people are not successful in getting rid of the incumbents in Congress and in the Senate. And hopefully they will do so, and we'll find out whether we can do it, or whether it's just too overwhelming or too late. I don't know. But hope springs eternal. We should try the best we can to do what we can within the legal system that we have. And if it doesn't work, then we can move on to other things.
Well, you bring up the specter of the 1,000-point drop that we saw on the Dow a couple of weeks ago that occurred in the span of, 15 minutes, that suddenly went back up several hundred points right afterwards, and I think many people will have heard about this in some capacity right now, but for people who aren't really familiar with this story, tell us about what occurred and the timing of this and why it's so obviously an example of the banksters flexing their muscle and scaring Congress.
Well, that was the intention, and it worked. What they used was the pulling back of liquidity in the market, and they use algorithms in their black boxes, so to speak, to drive the market down. And it didn't take them very long. They kicked out all the stops, and it collapsed almost 100 points, 1,000 points. I think it was 999. And it immediately came back all but 300 points. Now, those kind of things don't happen. They only can be engineered. And ever since 1988, when the Working Group on Financial Markets was formed, there's been ongoing and continual manipulation of the markets. It's always gone on. But this is officially sanctioned. It's law and it's legal to do this. And so they continue to do what they want to do with the markets. And anybody who has any surplus funds who wants to invest is very reticent to do so, because more and more people are finding out what's going on in these markets. And they don't want to participate, but where do they go? Gold and silver? Probably. And that's what's happening. I mean, you're seeing it happen in Europe right now. For the last, I would say, probably 6 to 8 weeks, there's been a run in gold and silver bars and coins all over Europe, but particularly in Germany and Switzerland. It's because people are taking a flight to quality. They don't want the euro, they want something better. And, you know, if you boil everything down today because of the status that the euro is now in, what you have is two major currencies, the dollar and gold. And gold is the perennial currency. People of the last two generations don't know that because nobody ever told them, nor have they told them to read about history. If you go back 6,000 years, you'll find that gold was the common denominator in the exchange of goods and services, representing what we would call today a currency. And so there's a battle going on. The battle was anticipated. In fact, Paul Volcker said that in 1983, I wish we had controlled the price of gold. It would have been a lot easier. And you have the dollar, which is a totally fiat currency, and you have gold, which is the perennial currency. And the question arises, which do you want? Well, I want the best one. Well, gold's the best one. And they've got people throughout the world bamboozled about currencies, which are all fiat, with minor exception. And those currencies aren't worth anything in reality. And so that's the battle that's going on, and they anticipated that. That's why they have suppressed the prices of gold and silver for so long, because they don't want the competition. And you see them, they don't even care anymore. They come into the market and they're blatant. They just drive prices down the last 2 or 3 days, and then it's over and the prices turn around and go right back up again. But that's what they're up to, because they want a world government and a world currency. And that's the way of going about that, by suppressing gold and silver prices.
Right, and just to be clear on that point, it's a completely artificial suppression, and it's not actually the case of gold decreasing in value or losing its value. Simply, they're trying to keep it down while they plunge the markets to try to, I guess, convince people that gold is not the place to run to, but their new currency, which they're going to usher in, probably based on special drawing rights. And just to back up on what you're saying there, there's absolutely every indication that Europe is experiencing a run on gold right now, and dealers are having a hard time to find anything. And Germans are apparently going to South Africa and the Krugerrands to try to get some gold, physical gold supplies. And also, I don't know if you saw this, but recently Andrew Maguire, the JP Morgan whistleblower who reported to the SFTC, sorry, the CFTC about a gold manipulation by JP Morgan and other big firms, he has confirmed to World News Daily that he now believes that it truly was an attack on his life and an attempt to kill him with the recent hit and run which he experienced. So, that just keeps getting more and more interesting. Any other word that you've heard on that case or anything related to that?
No, just what you've said, and of course I and others have covered it, and yourself quite extensively. And of course, there's nothing in the media about it, and because the media is controlled by these people, they do what they want to do. And I think that this episode of suppression that's been going on for so long is coming to an end, because I think they're out of gold. If they're not out of gold, they don't want to sell anymore. And if the European Bank Consortium is any example, they haven't sold any gold for a year and a half or 2 years to speak of. And they see that there's a possibility that they may end up with paper that isn't really worth anything. And so you've got a giant fight going on, and the fight is between those who create, distribute fiat currencies and those who believe in gold.
What do you think about the possibility of setting up community-based currencies on a greater scale and trying to withdraw from the currencies that they've created for us?
You mean in certain regions of the country or states
That's
that
right,
they
yeah.
would have their own local currency? I think really it's a, more than anything else, it's a discount mechanism. It's created to bring business and keep business within the community. It's not competing with the Fed Reserve, so to speak. And so I think for what they are, they're viable, obviously. I mean, the Berkshire dollar is one of the ones that's been in the forefront and has worked quite well. But unless states were to break off as groups or individuals to leave the union, so to speak, and print their own currency, you wouldn't get any real change, and that's the only way I can see it coming about.
Right, exactly, and that's why Ron Paul has always stated that one of the first key steps to deregulating the system would be to make legal the printing of other currencies to basically legalize competition for the Federal Reserve. So that's one of the things which I assume the people at the top would be afraid of is a mass movement out of their fiat dollars and into something else, which is of course why it's illegal.
Yeah, exactly. It's perennial. It's been going on ever since they invented paper. And I don't know when the Chinese did that. I can't remember. But And I do think it was them that did create paper, if I'm not mistaken. And that was an easy way for everybody to be able to conduct commerce. But you always had somebody in between who's using fractional banking. And historically, it's been 9 to 1. They would create $9 worth of spending for every $1 they had in deposit, which at times can be a very dangerous proposition. Just recently, in the last several years, in America and elsewhere, we've had a situation where the creation of leverage, we'll call it, has been 100 to 1. Now, there's no banker in the world that can justify that. And so they were deliberately gambling, and it didn't work out in the United States. And we had TARP and all those other programs, which the American public bailed out the banks. And now we have it in Europe. And that's all engineered from the Federal Reserve. I can promise you that. Their fingerprints are all over it. And they will continue to try to do those kind of things to save themselves as long as they're in power. And the minute you try to do something to stop them, they say, well, we'll just destroy your country. I mean, that's what Paulson said. We'll just destroy everything. And you know what my answer is? Do it. Because you're a minority, an extraordinarily small minority. And if you do that, yes, we're all going to lose everything. But believe me, you won't get to ever do it again. Nor will anybody in your family, and all those great fortunes that were made by cheating people will all be taken away from you. And you spend the rest of your lives in jail, if you're lucky, if we can get to you before the mob does. And I always like to mention 1789.
It's a very important year for the people in power to keep in mind, I guess, for very obvious reasons. Well, Bob Chapman, so it is a bluff when they really threaten to bring down the country itself.
It certainly is, and they win it every time because nobody wants to take them to the edge. So what you need is a Congress that says, hey, wait a minute, we're not going to do that, and a president that says, no, we're not going to do that. If you want to bring down the system, fine. We've got plenty of jails. We've got room in them. If there's not enough room, we'll find some place to put you. I mean, it's the only thing these people understand, because they're fighting a battle that they created. And if they lose it all. Maybe we do too, but that's not the point. We didn't start the fight. They did, because they want to subject us to slavery. But they're not going to tell us that. But if you read the publications and you go back 1,000 years through their history, you'll find out that's what they're really all about.
Right. Well, presidents who say no to the existing power structure have a funny habit of losing their heads to lone gunmen.
Yeah, that's right. And it's unfortunate, but like Andrew McGuire found out, they try to use the car rather than the gun. And it didn't work.
Thankfully, yes, this time.
You know, if you go back in history, they financed almost every war on both sides. They don't care who wins. Number one, it gets rid of people. And number two, they make a lot of money. And number three, they get people going off in one direction so they won't notice what's going on in another direction, such as economic and financial problems. And that's why it's easy to call wars, because you know when they'll need them. And they just crank a war up. I mean, a good example is the United States in World War II. Very few people wanted to go to war. And they broke the Japanese diplomatic code in 1937, knew exactly what they were doing. And so they lined up the ships in Pearl Harbor and invited the Japanese to bomb so they could get in the war. And that's a fact. And when I found that out, when I went into counterintelligence, my whole life changed. I found out you couldn't believe a word the government said. And that's why I've done what I've done for the past 50 years once I left their employ, so to speak.
Absolutely. Well, how can you go back to the employ of that type of mentality in any way, shape, or form, or in any way give credibility to that system? We must fight back against it in every way we can. So switching out of that morbid track of conversation and into another, we've just seen the coming and going of the annual Trilateral Commission meeting this year in Dublin, Ireland. And we're getting set for the Bilderberg coming up in 2 weeks in Spain, just outside of Barcelona. So what have you heard about what happened at the Trilateral Commission and what may be coming for the Bilderberg conference?
Well, I heard they wanted to have a war with Iran, and also that they're having a hard time doing what they'd like to do. And but other than that, I haven't heard anything unusual or world-ending. But then again, I'm not that much up to speed on it.
Right, and well, we have this year's Bilderberg to look forward to find out more about the coming year, but I'm sure we'll see that, as usual, being filtered out through the G8 and through other conferences that take place through the cycle of the year. But I'm sure they'll be getting their marching orders here in the next couple of weeks, so we have that to look forward to. But in the meantime, people can become informed from the other perspective, the good guys' perspective, by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. Tell people a little bit about the International Forecaster.
Well, it's about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesdays and Saturdays, usually around 40 pages each time. And all the things that you need to know are there every week. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the Internet. And you can get a free introductory copy by going to our site, theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. If you have a question, we answer everybody. Email us at bob@intforecaster.com. That's bob@intforecaster.com. Or you can call toll free 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And for those of you who do call that number, there is a special, an unbelievable special, to get the International Forecaster. And so if you're thinking of doing that, you ought to call that number. You'll be very pleasantly surprised.
And anyone who isn't thinking of doing that should either already be subscribed or should really be thinking about why they're not, because trust me, this is an absolutely essential publication and comes out twice a week, and it is absolutely filled to the brim with news and information that is very vital, of course, as we counter the obfuscations of the controlled corporate media. So Bob Chapman, thank you very much for all the work you're doing, and thank you for joining me once again tonight.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for listening. Bye-bye.